Welcome to the Princeton Laxcast. I'm Jerry Price. I am here with Princeton men's lacrosse coach Matt Madelon. And coach, welcome.
Happy to be back. Week two.
So let's talk week one before we get into week two. And that's before we talk about your week one. Let's talk about Chris Saylor's week one, as she became the first coach in Division I men's or women's lacrosse history ever to win 400 games at one school. The third ever to get to 400. The woman is Cindy Timchill from Northwestern Navy and Maryland and Navy, and the only men's coach who's ever gotten there is John Donowski, who obviously won a bunch of his games at Hofstra before going to Duke. Chris joining that club, pretty elite group, and also the only one to do it at one school. What do you think of that accomplishment?
We get to hang with her every day, but legendary status, very incredible. I mean, 400 games, I think, you know, as a young coach and a lot of coaches around the country, when they see stuff like that, you only hope and pray that you find a school that allows you to grow, develop, build that consistency of excellence and build a resume like that. We're shocked. She's awesome. She's so impressive. Her program's great. It's really, really incredible.
Are you able, I mean, of any sport, women's basketball, men's basketball, women's soccer, men's basketball, women's lacrosse and men's lacrosse, are lacrosse only in, you know, the same sport only in name. There, you know, there's 12 players on the field in women's lacrosse, there's 10 players on the field in men's lacrosse. The sticks are different. The strategies are different. They're wildly different games. But in terms of, you know, there seems to be a lot of, I don't know what the word is, camaraderie, or a lot of like cooperation and spirit between the men's coaches and the women's coaches of similar sports. What's your relationship with Chris like, and what are you able to learn from her?
I mean, it's been great. When I was an assistant, always very welcoming of our staff. And then, you know, when I became intern and then head coach, you know, I leaned on a lot of coaches within the department. But, you know, Chris is someone that's been doing it so well and so consistent for a long time. She's just been very helpful. Her staff's great. So really, it's just a remarkable accomplishment. But the camaraderie's great. I mean, I think that, you know, a lot of our, you know, our athletes and her athletes, they hang out together on campus. I think that, and I think that's a lot from the many schools I've been at. I see a lot of the similarities. I think it's just a compete level. They're always tight teams, whether they grow up and come from the same. You know, lacrosse is still a small, it's a growing sport, but a lot of the top players are still coming from those hotbed areas, which are both men and women hotbeds. So they probably know each other growing up through the ranks, and, you know, I can kind of, you know, attribute it to that.
So let's talk about your team's opening win, 23-7 over Monmouth. It took you 14 seconds to get a goal. It was 5-0 after 6 minutes. Really never a game. It was just a total blowout from start to finish. What did you see other than getting on a roll in the final lopsided score?
We were just really happy. We were able to have a good preseason, and then, you know, the week of practice leading up to it, we had to refocus at one point throughout the week and just make sure, you know, we were doing things the right way, you know, our brand of lacrosse, our style of lacrosse, and it was nice to be able to put the product out on the field for the first time. I think that any coach, you know, you're going into your first game, you always have the first game jitters, your team's got the first game jitters, so to be able to put a couple in early, we got a couple great breaks. And even up to, you know, they had a great offensive flurry where John Levine made a couple great saves, which allowed us to separate even further early on. So really happy as a staff. We were very happy with the start. Very good team effort. Got a lot of different contributions from a lot of different players, and we're very pleased with that.
Well, let's start with the Ivy League Player of the Week, Emmett Cordray, who matched his 2018 season point total of 8 with 8 in that game. 6 goals, 2 assists. He got you started with the first goal 14 seconds in, and then he had the second one as well. He had 3 in the first quarter. And it's a pretty good first start for somebody as a senior who has made some significant contributions in his career. But to come out and have a game like that in the first game of senior year had to be pretty special.
Yeah, Emmett did a really nice job. Look, we preach it all day, next man up. You know, Phil Robertson had not gotten a start. You know, he was just recovering a little bit from an injury. And, you know, we went with Cordray, and he did a nice job. He played his role within the system. He capitalized on his opportunities. And he was ready for his opportunity, which is the most important thing. And I think that as you continue to build and develop a program, you need guys to step up when their name is called. And that young man did just that. So we were very pleased with Emmett.
So let's talk about a couple of guys who made big contributions. And really, the next one I'd like to ask you about is Jake Stevens, because he, in his first game, had 9 ground balls, 7 of them on the wings on faceoffs. And we joked about it. When we talked last week about when you mentioned Culver and tenacity, you think Zach Currier, and I'm not comparing Stevens to Currier after one game, but what did he show you?
He's a talented young guy when the ball's on the ground. So we did a nice job as a unit there. And, you know, Jake was the beneficiary of just being in the right spots and making the tough plays. And, you know, our goal going into it was to make it a 3v3 scrap and muck it up a little bit and let our wing players make some plays. And him and Andrew Song, you know, between Stevens and Song, we feel really comfortable with our first wing unit. And Luke Anderson did a nice job getting in there as well. So Jake did a heck of a job. We expect a lot more from him. And you know he's gonna continue owning that role and really getting better at it throughout the year.
So as long as you have Michael Sowers, who put up 2 goals and 5 assists and became the 4th player in program history to reach 100 career assists, the fastest to 100 career assists, he joins Kevin Lowe, Ryan Boyle, and John Hess as the only 3 players in program history ever to get 100. And you know we talked about Chris Taylor with her 400th win. You talk about Elizabeth George of the women's team got 100 career points, and you have the obsession with round numbers that exists. And then you have Dave Eubek. Have you ever met him, 1980?
I have not.
Very good guy. Anyway, he had 99 career assists. So, you know, it's and he probably had one that he got cheated out of somewhere
online. Yeah, I was
going
to say, you should have hooked him up.
It was a little before my time. But, you know, even if you just want to say he's the 5th with at least 99 assists, but you're talking about great players who have reached that level. And, you know, Michael's always going to be the other team's focal point. One thing I did notice about that was he had 3 cost turnovers on the ride. But as long as you have a guy like Michael Sowers, Chris Brown is always going to be a little underrated. But he also had a huge first game, 5 goals for Chris, who had at least 1 goal in every game last year, is the only player on the team that did that a year ago. And how much better is he now?
Both those guys are great. I mean, look, you know, being able to dish the ball like Michael does is incredible. And you need guys to make sure they're in the right spot to finish plays. And we did just that. And then, you know, having Chris Brown along there, that's a big physical lefty wing player. He's just done a really nice job. Again, he's a guy that capitalizes on opportunities. But he's gotten bigger. He's committed himself to the weight room. He keeps maturing. So we're really happy to see his next steps as well. But you mentioned the 3 cause turnovers. And that's something that, you know, we get to sit on these podcasts. And I get to, you know, I go through interview after interview about 22 and his skill set and this or that. And, you know, I preach it all the time. But he's the hardest working guy on the field. He's the hardest working guy off the field. He's the hardest working guy in the film room. And when you can put a stat out with 3 cause turnovers, all that does is, you know, when we do make a mistake offensively or the goalie does make a save, we do turn it over, the ability to ride it back and to have that discipline and total team effort is really incredible. So, we love that stat. We love that stat more than the goals and assists.
So it's the first game that you ever coached here in which Tyler Blaisdell was not the starting goalie. So what'd you see out of John Levine? And I know you're happy with all 3 of your goalies.
Yeah, I am. And John did a really nice job. We were really pleased for him as a staff and a program for him to get his first win. I think that's always, you know, look, goalies, and it's a funky position anyway. There's always a level of nerves in it. But John went in there. He actually, right off the bat, they broke us first faceoff. Fast break came down. John made a save, you know, seconds into the game. Great stop. Always nice to get the first one. I think goalies put a lot of pressure on themselves for that. We as coaches, you know, we want the consistency. But John made the first one. He made a good flurry, like I had mentioned earlier, that allowed us to separate early on in the game. So it could have been a different story if John was a little off to start. But we were very happy with his performance. Did a nice job in the cage, got his body on a few, did a pretty good job in the clearing game as well. He continues to grow there. So we were really happy with John's performance.
Was there anybody else that, you know, obviously a lot of people scored. A lot of the freshmen got in. A couple had some goals. Bo Pettersson had his first 2. Jack Crockett had 1. Anderson had an assist. Stevens had an assist. I think I'm forgetting somebody. But, you know, in general, is there somebody you saw who played that you sort of really stood out to?
You know, we're still trying to dial our fundamentals as a program. So when we have guys like Strib Walker and Mike Marine, who are 2 seniors out there making plays in between the lines, as defensive midfielders and offensive midfielders, those guys really continue to set the tone for us. So as long as we can keep growing and getting better fundamentally and the seniors and the captains can keep bringing the young guys along, we'll keep making steps.
Seems like a good opening game, Monmouth. They're always a good team in their league. They're building a pretty good program there. It's close. It's a New Jersey team. So it seems like that's, you know, the last 2 years, the last one was double overtime. This one obviously lopsided, but it seems like that was a good opening opponent. And it leads into what is now a very tough stretch of a schedule coming up, and it's going to happen very quickly. It starts Saturday at noon. That game is a noon faceoff, not 1 o'clock, but noon, against Virginia on Sherrod Field, the home opener. And so let's talk about that game. And you're probably catching Virginia at the absolute worst time you can catch them, as Virginia already has two losses. They've lost to Loyola. They beat Lehigh, and then they lost to High Point on Monday night. You know, that's a team that some people thought was a Final Four national championship level team. They certainly have that level of talent. A lot of teams start out 1-2 and end up playing into Memorial Day weekend. You know, when I saw that they had lost that game to High Point, I was like, oh no, here they come with, they're going to be angry when they get here. So what are your thoughts?
We're always an angry team. So, no, look, we've got got the utmost respect for Virginia.
Not to interrupt you, but like, you know, one of the reasons I like doing these podcasts is it sort of gets into the head of how coaches think. And this is how I think. Like, you know, I'm not a coach, but I think like you catch teams that are good that sort of now need to get wins, you know, to put their resume together, knowing that they have their ACC tournament, their ACC schedule coming up, and all the other tough teams that they play. You think to yourself that they're going to be a lot. I personally think they're going to be a lot more focused when they get here. They're going to be like, all right, look, we got our bad start, but now let's put it behind us. And oftentimes, teams will look to a game like this one as the game that turned their season around. Do coaches think that way?
You know, I think coaches may. I think our staff's done a very nice job of training ourselves to if I'll coach talk it, control the controllable. I mean, we can't control what Virginia's feeling, how they're feeling, if they're desperate, if they're going to come in angry. We can only control our group. So we're just excited to prepare. I mean, this is a heck of a team. This is an NCAA team from last year. It's a team with a lot of talent. So we're just putting our game plan together and continuing to get better, and we're really fired up for this weekend.
Not a lot of weaknesses that you can look at Virginia, and you know, setting aside the 1-2 start, you know, like you mentioned, they have some just great players across the board. In the game last year in Charlottesville, 18-15, Virginia won, was close throughout, I think was tied at halftime. They pulled away in the fourth quarter, but a very good game, and it's a very good opponent to play and to bring here. What are some of the things that you circle around this game? Is it just their stars you have to contain? Or
I mean, they do a nice job. Their coaching staff, you know, Coach Tiffany, Coach Turner, and Coach Kerwin, they do a heck of a job preparing the group. They attack you in many different ways. But, you know, when we came out of that game last year, we really felt we let an opportunity slip away from us. We did not execute at the faceoff X. We did not execute in transition defense. We did not execute in the riding clearing game. We did a very nice job with our offensive efficiency and our shooting efficiency that game. We just didn't get enough stops when it came down to it. So we were really upset after that one. Even though the game was close, you know, we just weren't happy as a program with how we played. So we're looking forward to getting another opportunity and playing this group.
And there'll be a lot of guys playing for you that didn't play in that game last year, and not too many guys for them who didn't play in that game last year. They're a pretty veteran team. A lot of the familiar names are the same names as last year, Krause on attack, and Aiken, and Matt Moore, and the pole, who was a freshman last year, who was really good.
Yeah, Connor, a heck of a player.
And the goalie is you know, he's back for his second year as a starter. You didn't have George Bond in that game last year, and you didn't have your freshman middies in that game. The current freshman middies, obviously, were in high school, so you're a much different team than you were a year ago. When you head into a game like that where your team is a lot different, you have some guys back, but it's a much different look, how much can you take away from what you saw last year?
I mean, you know, look, every year that's the best part of coaching is that you kind of get to get your group, get to base camp to start the year, and then, you know, kind of see how it takes shape. So we're definitely a different team. And I think most coaches would say that year to year, even with a veteran group coming back. I think you kind of have to always tweak and motivate differently. But I'm really happy with our guys thus far. We need to make sure we continue with a great week of practice and a great week of preparation. And it should be a good one.
What did you think of the rule changes and how they impacted actually getting out on the field and play, specifically the shot clock and the substitution box?
You know what? We don't have the blueprint yet. We feel pretty good about our plan moving forward, but I think we're still learning in different situations when and where you can call timeouts and how to give your team an advantage there, or how to substitute effectively and efficiently so you maximize time on either side of the ball, and doing the same to an opponent. So we're still working through it a little bit, but I think our guys did a very good job executing our game plan and understanding how we want to approach the rule changes.
And what's your take on what you've seen so far early on around Division I? Have you paid close attention, because there have been a lot of interesting results so far and a couple of teams that look like they're for real, Penn State and Loyola, and then like a whole army of teams that look like they have a chance to be pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, look,
including Army.
Absolutely. No, I think, we're obviously very dialed into it as a coaching staff. This is our sport and this is our livelihood. So we keep tabs on everybody and, try to see what everyone's doing system-wise and how people are making coaching adjustments and how people are approaching games. But it's been a wild start. I think the most confusion around the game, even with all the parity, is still around how to officiate the dive. To go back to the rules. So I think you'll see a lot of funky calls around that part of the game. But it's impressive. I mean, some of these programs stepping up and getting good wins, and, you can't take any days off.
And High Point, who, they've beaten Duke and Virginia, and they have Justin Tuma, who coached on your
staff. That's right. Coach Tuma, we love him, and former Roanoke guy. No, he's doing a great job down there. It seems like he's running their defense well, stifling some big teams. So we're really happy for those guys.
So it's Princeton and Virginia at noon on Saturday at Sherrod Field at Class of 52 for the home opener. A week from Saturday, Johns Hopkins will be here. That's a part of a doubleheader with the women's team. We'll talk about that next week and the game against Virginia, how that turns out, on the next edition of the Princeton Laxcast. But for this week, I'd like to thank our head coach, Matt Madelon, for being with us.
Thank you.
So for head coach Matt Madelon, I'm Jerry Price. Thank you for listening to the Princeton Laxcast. We'll be here with you every Wednesday during the regular season. And thank you for your continued support of Princeton men's lacrosse.